Hello, listeners. This is Iris, and you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, April 12th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast first thing, this coming from KCRG. Windy Friday leads into warm weekend, watching severe storm risk on Tuesday. After a showery Thursday, drier weather will wrap up the work and school week and lead into a really nice weekend. Things are already breezy out there this morning across the area, with speeds early in the 10 to 20 mile per hour range, with some higher gusts. Those speeds increase a little bit later this morning into the afternoon, with gusts that once again reach into the 30 to 40 mile per hour range. Be ready for windy conditions throughout the day, especially if traveling in open areas. Winds should turn a bit lighter by the evening and significantly lighter tonight into early Saturday. Otherwise, it should be a pretty straightforward weather day. Skies will clear out after a few early clouds and should stay mostly sunny for most of the day. A few pop-up clouds are possible this afternoon, but we should avoid any additional shower and storms like we saw yesterday. Temperatures range from the upper 50s in our far northern and northeastern counties to the low 60s in the south and west. The promised warm-up for the weekend still appears to be on track, with temperatures set to surge well beyond normal for mid-April. The push of that warmer air mass comes after winds shift on Friday night into early Saturday, becoming southerly by daybreak. This will help get us from lows in the upper 30s to back in the 70s by the afternoon. Expect breezy conditions, but plenty of sunshine to go along with it. While a weak cold front will move through on Sunday with little fanfare beyond a shift in winds, we're not expecting much change in the weather. In fact, we should end up a little warmer with highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. Winds stay a bit breezy, but from a northerly direction by the afternoon. All in all, it should be a really nice weekend and a great time to get outdoors. Don't forget the sunscreen. While UV index values are still moderate this time of year, sunburns and skin damage still become possible for most after 45 minutes of exposure. Our attention then turns to a storm system that is likely to develop early next week and move through the region. Initially, the focus for showers and storms will be to our west and southwest, closer to the source of moisture and favorable conditions in the upper levels of the atmosphere. Most of Monday looks to be dry as a result, though there is still a slim chance for a shower or storm early in the day. More shower and storm activity becomes possible by Monday night into early Tuesday next week, either developing on top of us or moving in from the southwest. Severe weather appears unlikely during this round of activity, but some heavier downpours will be possible. Temperatures once again reach the upper 70s to low 80s on Monday and dip into just the upper 50s on Monday night. Tuesday could pose a greater risk for strong to severe storms in eastern Iowa as the area of low pressure with the storm system slowly moves to the east and northeast. Its track looks to take it across western or northwest Iowa, which places our area on the warm side of it. This also is more favorable location for strong to severe storms in a traditional setup, with places close to the low potentially enhancing the change in wind speed and direction in the atmosphere, known as wind shear. Showers and storms look likely at times throughout the day, that's Tuesday of next week, as temperatures still strive for the 70s. The biggest question mark for this potential severe weather risk is the placement of the low-pressure center on Tuesday, and the potential for showers and storms from Monday night lingering into Tuesday. If this takes place, then the atmosphere may not have the chance to recharge for more storms by Tuesday afternoon and evening. If activity diminishes or moves out early in the day, the risk for severe weather may increase a bit. Despite these questions, the Storm Prediction Center includes the entirety of eastern Iowa in its outlook area for Tuesday. Though the risk for severe weather looks to diminish, the chance for some additional showers and a storm or two lingers into the middle of next week. There will be some dry time here too, but the possibility is there from Wednesday into Thursday. Windy conditions will also still be around in this stretch as the low pressure center moves through. Temperatures will be taking a tumble for the remainder of next week too. We go from the lows in the 50s and highs in the 60s on Wednesday to lows in the 20s and 30s and highs in the low 50s at best by Saturday. That's a week from tomorrow. Drier weather should be back in the picture by the tail end of the forecast as well. Let's turn now to the stories on the front page of today's Courier. The lead story is titled, Reynolds Signs Immigration Bill. This story written by Tom Barton of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Measure makes illegal entry a state crime. Challenge is planned. And it begins with a photograph showing Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts speaking as Texas Governor Greg Abbott and 10 other governors, including our Governor Kim Reynolds, hold a press conference at Mission, Texas on October 6th of 2021. Governor Reynolds is looking on from the back row. Dateline Des Moines. Iowa authorities would be allowed to arrest and order the removal of immigrants who enter the United States illegally, mimicking a controversial Texas law being challenged in court. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds on Wednesday signed into law Senate File 2340. The law, which takes effect July 1st, creates a new state crime of illegal reentry. The law makes it an aggravated misdemeanor, which carries up to a two-year sentence for people to enter Iowa if they were previously deported from the United States, denied entry to the country, or left the country while facing a deportation order. In some cases, including people with certain prior convictions, the state crime would become a felony, punishable by up to 5 to 10 years in prison. Law enforcement would not be able to arrest individuals for violating the law while they were at school, religious institution, healthcare facility, or a facility that provides exams for sexual assault survivors. The bill also would create civil immunity for city and state employees and contractors who are sued for implementing the law. For those convicted under the new law, Iowa judges could issue an order requiring the person to return to the country from which they entered the United States, specifying the manner in which they'll be transported to a U.S. port of entry, and listing the law officer and state agencies responsible for ensuring the violator leaves the country. Undocumented immigrants could face felony charges for noncompliance. Republicans argue the measure is needed to respond to record numbers of illegal crossings and accuse Democratic President Joe Biden of abandoning his responsibility to secure the border. Quote, the Biden administration has failed to enforce our nation's immigration laws, putting the protection and safety of Iowans at risk, Reynolds said in a statement. Those who come into our country illegally have broken the law, yet Biden refuses to deport them. This bill gives Iowa law enforcement the power to do what he is unwilling to do, enforce immigration laws already on the books, unquote. Immigration enforcement generally is the responsibility of the federal government, and opponents have argued states do not have the authority to take measures like these. A similar law passed in Texas is temporarily blocked while a federal appeals court weighs a challenge to a lower court's ruling that struck down the measure. The lower court found the law, quote, threatens the fundamental notion that the United States must regulate immigration with one voice, unquote. Immigration rights advocates warn the Iowa bill will lead to widespread racial profiling and stereotyping. They argue it undermines, not promotes, public safety and the rule of law, and will consume state court and law enforcement resources. The bill does not provide funding or a requirement to train officers on immigration law, despite authorizing them to make decisions about a person's immigration status. Opponents also raised concerns that parents may be separated from their children if arrested under the new state crime. Quote, the law would allow police to arrest people based on their federal immigration status and authorize Iowa judges to order someone to be deported or jailed before they have an opportunity to seek humanitarian protection that they are entitled to, said Mark Stringer, the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. Quote, the Iowa law enforcement and state judges tasked with authority to carry out this outrageous legislation are not trained in immigration law and have no proper authority to enforce it, Stringer said. If enacted, this law will wreak havoc in Iowa families and communities and threaten Iowans who are citizens and non-citizens alike, unquote. Eastern Iowa immigrant rights group Escucha Mi Voz said the group will attempt to block the law through courts and other avenues. Its members voted last month to organize demonstrations on May 1st and July 1st against the law. Quote, we are also exploring legal action in the courts and have requested meetings with the U.S. Department of Justice, Iowa Department of Public Safety, and local police chiefs and county sheriffs. Ninosa Campos wrote in an email last month to the group's members in Spanish. The Iowa City-based group provides housing and health services, legal aid, community organizing, and advocacy for immigrant workers in the state. The group has more than 500 individual members and 40 faith-based members. Grants to feed kids expand in lieu of EBT, but $29 million federal program dwarfs the $900,000 state effort. This story written by Aaron Murphy of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau, Dateline Des Moines. More than 3 months after turning down $29 million in federal funding for low-income families to spend on food for their school-aged children this summer, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday a $900,000 grant program with similar goals. That amounts to about 3% of the money that was sent back. In December, Reynolds announced the state will not participate in the federal summer EBT program, which provides low-income families with $40 per month in benefits for each child during the 3 months of summer. That program started during the COVID-19 pandemic emergency and now is being made permanent. It was designed to provide free meals in the summer months to students from low-income families who receive free or reduced-price meals during the school year. States were given the option of remaining in the program. Iowa was among 17 states, nearly all with Republican governors, that declined the federal money. Reynolds, in her wisdom, said she believed the program was not sustainable and did not promote nutrition. The new state grant program is being funded by federal pandemic relief funds, so it's federal money anyway. It is designed to create additional summer meal sites that will serve more children in currently underserved areas across the state, the governor's office said in a news release. Quote, providing young Iowans with access to free, nutritious meals in their communities during the summer months has always been a priority, Reynolds said in a statement. With the Summer Meal Program Expansion Grant, we will expand these well-established programs across our state to ensure Iowa's youth have meals that are healthy and use local community farms and vendors when possible. The number of eligible applicants and their proposals will determine the number and amount of grants awarded across the state, the governor's office said. The grants will help school districts and other qualified organizations expand participation in two current federal summer child nutrition programs, the Summer Food Service Program and Seamless Summer Option. Those programs are administered by the Iowa Department of Education in partnership with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Qualifying schools can participate in either federal program, and private nonprofit organizations, community and faith-based organizations, higher education institutions, and local government agencies will be able to participate in the Summer Food Service Program, the governor's office said. New meal sites must be located in an area where at least 50% of the children are eligible for free or reduced-priced meals. The meals can be served at schools, churches, parks, libraries, and other public spaces, according to the governor's office. Luke Elzinga, board chair of the Iowa Hunger Coalition, said the daily average participation at summer meal sites in Iowa in 2023 was 21,557 children, which is less than 10% of the more than 245,000 Iowa children who would have received the $40 per month from the summer EBT that Reynolds rejected. Quote, "While we certainly welcome the new grant program to expand summer meal sites, we also recognize that barriers will remain for families to access these sites. Summer EBT is meant to complement, not replace, summer feeding sites," Elzinga said in a statement. Quote, "We truly hope this grant program increases access to nutritious food for low-income kids during the summer. But the fact remains that our governor chose to deny $29 million in federal funds that would go directly to low-income families with children who face additional financial struggles during the summer months when kids are out of school," the statement continued. Under the new state grant program, priority will be given to applicants seeking to establish a new meal site and to schools or organizations that did not participate in the federal programs last year or are in a county with two or fewer meal sites. Schools and organizations can apply for reimbursement funding for up to $10,000 for the first new site and $5,000 for each additional site, up to a total of $20,000 for current program sponsors and $30,000 for new sponsors. Quote, "Through partnerships with community-based providers and schools, the Summer Meal Program Expansion Grant will build upon family-focused solutions to support child nutrition and well-being in the summer," unquote. Iowa Department of Education Director Mackenzie Snow said in a statement, quote, "The Iowa Department of Education remains committed to supporting students with healthy meals and food options as it supports communities in growing the impact of existing child nutrition programs," unquote. State House Democrats continued Wednesday to express their disappointment that Reynolds declined the much larger federal program. Quote, "While I appreciate the governor finally doing something for hungry children in our state, the competitive grant program announced today amounts to crumbs for Iowa kids," Senator Sarah Trone Garriott, a Democrat from West Des Moines, said in a statement. Quote, "Governor Reynolds could have accepted $29 million in federal food assistance that would have reached 240,000 children in every corner of the state. The $900,000 state program she announced today is tiny by comparison and forces Iowa communities to compete for a sliver of that much smaller pie. It's not enough to meet the real needs facing our state, and it doesn't make up for her decision to let Iowa kids go hungry," unquote. Trone Garriott and Elzinga said the new state program does not account for some barriers to low-income families getting help from food assistance programs, like a lack of transportation to get to meal sites, or who live in areas without meal sites. Quote, "While summer feeding programs have their place, they are not accessible to all Iowa families," Trone Garriott said. "Families must bring their children to and from the site every day, which is impossible for most working families. There are many Iowa school districts and entire counties that don't even have a feeding site. As a result, these programs assisted less than 20,000 children last year." Quote, "The governor could have expanded these programs and participated in the summer EBT program, but instead, she put politics before the health and well-being of our kids," unquote. Applications for the new state program are being accepted at iowagrants.gov through May 7th. Turning the page now, we come to the Capitol Notebook, Pregnancy Program Changes, Other Bills Signed into Law. And the story begins with a color photograph showing the governor sitting at a desk signing the bill, and there are some children and a large group of adults standing behind her. Dateline Des Moines. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill into law on Wednesday, changing the rules for a program that funds anti-abortion pregnancy centers. The More Options for Maternal Support, MOMS, program was created by state lawmakers in 2022. The program has not gotten off the ground, though, as the state has struggled to find an administrator through multiple bidding opportunities. The law, Senate File 2252, gives the State Department of Health and Human Services the option to administer the program directly, rather than contracting with a provider that couldn't be found. It also loosens some of the requirements for a provider who administers the program if the department chooses one. The program will direct state funds to non-medically licensed centers that provide education, support, and services for pregnant women and discourage abortion, often run by religious organizations. Opponents of the centers argue they misrepresent their medical credentials and give inaccurate information. Republicans argue that the medical services provided by the centers would be overseen by state officials and they would be accountable to the HHS department. Next, swatting. Retail theft penalties heightened. Bills heightening penalties for swatting, the acts of falsely reporting a crime to draw a police response, and organized retail theft were among the bills Reynolds signed into law on Wednesday. Under Senate File 2161, a person who falsely reports a violent crime to the police will be guilty of a Class D or C felony, depending on the circumstances. A false report is currently an aggravated misdemeanor. A Class D felony is punishable by up to 5 years in prison, and a Class C felony by up to 10 years in prison. Several swatting incidents were reported at Iowa schools on the same day last year, and another was reported in Des Moines in February. House File 2594, which Reynolds signed into law, creates the crime of organized retail theft, which targets groups of people who coordinate robberies of retail merchandise. The law seeks to address smash-and-grab crimes. The penalty for organized retail theft ranges from an aggravated misdemeanor to a Class C felony, depending on the value of the property stolen. And next, digitally created child porn. Another bill Reynolds signed into law Wednesday went after deepfake pornographic images of minors. The law, Senate File 2243, addresses images or videos created by AI or other digital means that depict an identifiable minor engaged in a sex act. The law treats the digitally created images the same as real images and videos, bringing them under the definition of child pornography. Next, two-thirds approval for tax hikes. Iowa Senate lawmakers passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would require a two-thirds vote by both legislative chambers to increase income taxes on individuals and corporations. The resolution is one of two moving through the legislature to enshrine Iowa Republicans' tax policy into the state constitution. The other, which the Senate passed this month, would require the state to impose a flat income tax rate on individuals rather than imposing higher rates on higher earners. A constitutional amendment resolution must be passed by two separate general assemblies before going to an election ballot for a public vote. If it receives majority approval in the public vote, it is added to the Constitution. The tax amendments could appear on the 2026 general election ballot. Next, nuisance strip clubs. Iowa cities would have the option to restrict the hours strip clubs that present a danger to the public under a bill Iowa lawmakers sent to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk on Wednesday. The bill was led by the city of Davenport and supported by other large cities after a string of shootings at adult establishments. It imposes the same restrictions a law passed in 2022 that covered bars, but did not cover establishments that don't serve alcohol. Under House File 2531, a city or county would be able to petition a court to limit the hours of an adult establishment from noon to 10 p.m. if they determine it presents a threat to public safety. An establishment could be considered a public safety nuisance if someone fires a gun on or near the building, assaults another person with a dangerous weapon, or engages in a riot more than 3 times within a year. The bill passed unanimously in the House, and it is eligible to be signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. Cedar Heights Elementary librarian bookends students' school days. Story written by Holly Hudson Hill, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. Each morning before school, safety patrols at Cedar Heights Elementary School take their positions at the crosswalk on Hawthorne Drive. Cars begin to pull up and students trickle in. It is the calm before the storm of another school day. Soon, shouts of "Good morning" shatter the quiet. That's when you know Tiffany Ahrens has arrived. As she takes her post near the end of the sidewalk that leads to the back of the school, she immediately starts addressing students. Quote, "Are those new shoes?" she asks one student. "Is it your birthday?" she asks another. Quote, "Now watch this one," she said, referring to a young girl in the sidewalk. "As soon as she hits the sidewalk, she's going to take off. 3, 2, 1, and there she goes." Ahrens points to a boy. "We are having a battle of wills. He will not say good morning for love or money," she said, laughing. As usual, her cheery greeting is met with stony silence. Ahrens, who graduated from Carroll High School and came to this area to attend the University of Northern Iowa, became Cedar Heights teacher librarian in 2006. 2 years later, her duties grew to include overseeing the students' comings and goings. Quote, "It was an assignment from my administrator," she said. "It's twice a day, before and after school, mostly for student safety. The counselor who used to do it retired, and they wanted somebody out there, a familiar face, and I really started to enjoy it." Ahrens has endured some extreme weather, ranging from polar vortexes to days with heat index of 120 degrees. Quote, "The hot days are when I almost reach my breaking point," she said. "You can always layer up on the cold days, but you can only take so much off," unquote. It was one of those extreme weather days that started Ahrens's habit of carrying a board with a quote on it each morning. Quote, "It very much started off as a joke," Ahrens said. Quote, "I feel like April and May are my rewards for making it through the winter," unquote. Ahrens showed her displeasure at a heavy snowfall in April of 2018. Quote, "I got some cardstock and made a sign that said, 'Librarian on strike,' to protest the terrible weather," she said. "It evolved from there into something people look forward to. It's a way to give a little bit of encouragement to our families," unquote. Recently, a quote by Amanda Gorman graced the board, quote, "There is always a light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it," unquote. Ahrens' efforts don't go unnoticed. Tammy Bird became familiar with Ahrens while dropping off her grandson for school. She wrote a letter to the Courier singing Ahrens' praises. Quote, "She stations herself at the back entrance of the school, waiting to give each individual child a warm welcome with a huge smile and shout out," Bird wrote. Quote, "In spite of every kind of weather, you can count on her to announce your arrival." And now, listeners, we'll just take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, April 12th, on IRIS, that's I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, this announcement.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Now let's read from the opinion section. Our first editorial today was printed first in the Des Moines Register, and it's titled, "Immunize Roundup's Maker from Liability? Stop Favoring Corporations Over Iowans. Will we continue to elect legislators who are funded by agribusiness associations that listen to industry needs only and continue following the certain death trap of chemicals and pollution?" This editorial was written by Tommy Hexter as a guest columnist. Tommy Hexter is a rural organizer and educator with the Iowa Farmers Union in central Iowa. He is also a Democratic candidate for the Iowa House. Now here's the text. On April 2nd, the Iowa Senate passed Senate File 2412, a bill that would grant immunity to pesticide companies from civil lawsuits related to damages caused by Environmental Protection Agency-approved pesticides. A bill with the same approach is currently sitting in the House Ways and Means Committee after being notably rejected by the House Agriculture Committee, waiting to see if the industry can garner enough support to pass the legislation in both houses. Major pesticide companies, namely Bayer, which produces Roundup with the active ingredient glyphosate after purchasing Monsanto in 2016, have been facing billions of dollars in lawsuits annually regarding health damages that the plaintiffs claim is caused by exposure to their products. Their campaign in Iowa is part of a larger multi-state lobbying effort continuing to turn the judicial tide to protect industry over people. After all, some say it is cheaper to lobby politicians to change the rules than to fight court cases. But what does this mean for Iowa's farmers and for the state's future? I attended the Ways and Means Subcommittee hearing on the House version of this pesticide company immunity bill on March 27th. Chairperson Phil Thompson immediately turned over the floor to a lobbyist for Bayer, who presented two arguments. First, he believes that Americans should be able to trust the EPA label as enough protection. And second, he contended that Bayer may be unable to continue producing Roundup if it keeps losing money on lawsuits. We then heard from Iowa Farm Bureau and Iowa Corn Growers Association, who both said that their farmer members stand in support of this bill, as Roundup allows them to do conservation practices like no-till farming and cover crops, which improve Iowa's water quality. Those perspectives are reasonable and make a sympathetic case. Americans should be able to trust the EPA to protect them from chemicals, and I imagine that for many of Iowa's farmers, it is difficult to continue their current farming practices without Roundup. However, opponents of the bill, such as the Iowa Association of Justice, pointed out several holes in the arguments made by agribusiness representatives that I believe tell the deeper truth about what is happening here. First, the argument that Americans should be able to rely on EPA labels is easily disproved when you note that it was not until March 18th of 2024 that the EPA banned asbestos after nearly 70 years of scientific studies demonstrating that it causes harmful lung diseases. Additionally, other international bodies, including the International Agency for Research on Cancer, have deemed glyphosate as, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans, unquote. Second, Bayer claims that it is losing too much money on lawsuits, but less than 1% of Bayer's lawsuits are based in Iowa. Our legislature passing this lawsuit will not give more than a minuscule improvement to Bayer's financial situation. It would just remove the right of Iowa farmers to protect themselves in court, while other people around the country continue to maintain that right. Lastly, the argument that farmers are in support of this legislation is untrue. I testified as a representative of the Iowa Farmers Union, and I was confidently able to claim that we hadn't received any member support for this bill, and that our organization supports the ability of our farmers to seek relief for pesticide injury. It all started to make sense to me. Industry-driven farm and commodity groups represent their farmers on the issues that are easy, such as conservation and crop insurance. But this story presents a blatant instance where members are clearly left out and misrepresented in the face of challenging issues that involve corporate interests. This is an example of a larger, harsh reality in Iowa. Business, as usual, is killing us. We have the fastest-growing cancer rates in the nation and the largest use of Roundup. Those in power pull the wool over our eyes to prevent us from having a voice on the issues. But now, their motives and practices are becoming fully clear for the public to see. It's time to call your legislators and tell them to vote no on issues that represent corporations over Iowans. Or else, it is time to vote for someone else next time they are up for re-election. Which do we choose, Iowa? Will we continue to elect legislators who are funded by agribusiness associations that listen to industry needs only and continue following the certain death trap of chemicals and pollution? Or do we actually start to give grassroots politicians a chance to represent farmers and Iowans and give them the voice they need to decide on Iowa's future? We have tough conversations ahead of us about the future of Roundup and the safety of our drinking water, and Iowans deserve to have the information and a seat at the table in deciding what decisions are made. And here's a note about the author. Tommy Hexter is a Democrat candidate for Iowa House District 53, representing Poweshiek County and most of Tama County. He is currently rural organizer and educator with the Iowa Farmers Union, a commissioner of the Poweshiek County Soil and Water Conservation District, and the director of a local food business called Grinnell Farm to Table that sources products from 35 local farmers. And now from the New York Times, Republicans are fleeing the stench of a rotten Congress. This was written by Frank Bruni. When it comes to Donald Trump, House Republicans do a convincing pantomime of love. Many of them chirpily parrot his lies. Most of them merrily launder his misdeeds. They grovel for his favor, gush about getting his endorsement, and speak and vote in line with his desires. They're half partisan, half courtesan. But there's a heartache underneath, misery even. That's the truth of the Trump era. And that's the moral of the 2024 exodus from Congress. More than two dozen House Republicans, along with more than two dozen House Democrats, have headed or are headed for the exits. But the largeness of those numbers, which track with those in other election years over the past decade, don't tell the story. What matters is who these Republicans are, the disgust in their goodbyes, their palpable sense of defeat, and how it contradicts the fact that they have been in the majority in the chamber since early 2023. In power, they have found themselves close to powerless. That's the hellish paradox of their surrender to Trump. For many of them individually, his blessing is the best or only way to maintain support among their Republican constituents back home and win election. But for the lot of them, he's a curse, because he has contributed mightily to a degrading and dysfunctional culture on Capitol Hill. Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz are other banes of a serious, half-serious, or even quarter-serious Republican lawmaker's existence, are Trump's spiritual spawn. He begot their antics. He nurtured their rage. if being a House Republican has become unbearable, he bears critical responsibility for that. The Trump giveth, and the Trump taketh away. Five of the Republicans who decided to escape the Hill's poisonous climate didn't or won't even wait until the end of this year and finish out their terms. They can't flee fast enough. Among them is Representative Ken Buck, a Colorado Republican. Quote, "This place just keeps going downhill," he told reporters, "and I don't need to spend my time here. You say that kind of thing about a run-down bar where there's no eradicating the stench of spilled beer." He was talking about a broken-down institution that reeks of abandoned principles. It's losing longtime Republican leaders, estranged from and spurned by greener, meaner MAGA hellions. Kevin McCarthy, who was the House Speaker for less than 10 months last year, has already resigned and is gone. Representative Patrick McHenry of North Carolina, who served as a temporary speaker after McCarthy, won't seek re-election. They carry the scars of a scabrous 2023. Such was the Republican infighting that McCarthy's ascent to House Speaker required an unprecedented 15 roll call votes, and then he was ousted after the third shortest speakership in history. In a profoundly depressing analysis in the Times, Carl Hulse called 2023, quote, "one of the most tumultuous and unproductive legislative years in recent memory," unquote. Vital bills languished. Bedlam prevailed. Representative Tim Burchett, a Tennessee Republican, said that McCarthy had purposely elbowed him in the kidney. Quote, "and then I chased after him," he proudly reported. Zygotes behave more maturely. Quote, "it was historical and hysterical," Representative Steve Womack, an Arkansas Republican, said at the time. McHenry called it, quote, "a very actively stupid political environment," unquote. Now its fruits, quote, four GOP committee chairs are leaving. Mariana Sotomayor wrote in a roll call of the Republican refugees in the Washington Post last weekend, quote, "eight lawmakers are retiring from the coveted Energy and Commerce Committee, and eight subcommittee chairs are leaving," unquote. Sotomayor quoted Buck as saying, quote, "the populist wave has eroded the conservative values that I had when I came to this place. Now, we're impeaching people like it's some kind of carnival, and the Constitution is just a thing of the past to the very same people who were Tea Party patriots 10 to 12 years ago," unquote. A carnival ethos. Contempt for the Constitution. Call to mind any former president you know? In terms of the Republican Party's devolution over the past dozen years, there can be genuine debate. Which came first, the Tempest or the Trump? But it's indisputable that he worsened the weather. Perhaps he swept in on storm clouds already formed. But only then came the lightning. And now they seek shelter. McCarthy, McHenry, Buck, and so many more. They weren't built for the apocalypse. They should have done more to head it off. Now from the Iowa Capital Dispatch, colder winters in Iowa actually prove that global warming is a reality. Iowa is positioned to play a special role in helping to reduce carbon in the atmosphere, which is the root cause of climate change. This was written by Arnold Garson. The number one argument climate change deniers use to, quote, prove that global warming is not happening is the fact that there have numerous examples of historically low winter temperatures in the United States in recent years. How can our planet be warming if the winter temperatures are falling? Read on. This past January, the lows at Okoboji included minus 17 on January 13th and 14th, then minus 21 a week later. The wind chills were stunning. Unfortunately, the numbers do not appear to have been preserved in a readily accessible way. In Des Moines, however, the wind chill hit minus 36 on the night of the Iowa caucuses. It was the coldest weather ever recorded for a caucus night by a wide margin. Across the upper Midwest, It was one of the coldest weeks ever recorded, with temperatures not suited for human exposure. Mary Skopik, the executive director of the Iowa Lakeside Laboratory and one of the state's leading environmental scientists, said these temperatures actually prove the reverse of what climate deniers contend. They support the fact that our planet is getting warmer. Huh? The reason we are having temperatures like this, Skopik said, is because the polar ice caps are melting and are no longer able to contain the Arctic weather within the Arctic Circle. The cold is spreading south into places like Iowa. Quote, it's 50 below zero or something crazy like that, and people are like, well, that's evidence that climate change isn't happening, she said. Quote, actually, the reverse is true. If you go back 100 years, the polar ice and temperature around that polar ice was well contained. As the globe warms, what happens is that it becomes unstable and you get these outbreaks of polar air that plunge further down from the polar ice cap, Skopik said. The cold can't be all contained at the poles because the poles are warming, unquote. An unstable atmosphere translates to more extreme weather events, including stronger tornadoes, heavier rains, and more severe blizzards. There have been times in recent years when Okoboji has been colder than Fairbanks, Alaska, or even places further north, she said. Other unseen factors account for certain weather changes. One is El Niño that set up in the Pacific Ocean this past winter. People often forget that the circulation of the oceans is very instrumental in what is happening with our climate and weather, Skopik said. Basically, the oceans drive our atmosphere, and as the oceans continue to warm, there is a concern among environmental scientists that we may see ocean circulation slow or even stop, she said. What happens then? Uncharted territory, she said. No one knows for sure. But the discussion could begin with this fact. The only reason the temperatures in Europe are warm enough to grow crops is because of ocean circulation. The Gulf Stream takes warm water from Florida all the way up to Europe. Quote, if that stops, Europe is no longer able to grow crops, she said. The population of Europe is about 750 million. Think about it. Uncharted territory also could mean that temperatures around the world would be more even rather than having extreme cold at the polar cap with warmer weather as you move toward the equator. Quote, the things we've depended on won't be dependable anymore, she said. Preventing all of this comes down to just one thing, bringing down the level of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. Quote, we need to stop pumping so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, she said. But that, as the saying goes, is easier said than done. Quote, everybody has got to get into the canoe and row in the same direction to make this happen, she said. Everybody means that the U.S. and Russia and China and India and everybody else has to go along with the plan. We need to get serious about reductions in carbon dioxide emissions, Skopik said. She also warned that we may have to more broadly accept some of the imperfect solutions that have been created, such things as wind turbines, solar energy, and electric vehicles. There is a lot of pushback on electric vehicles, she said, and using coal-fired plants to build them or to generate electricity does not help. We need to build sources of electricity that are not coal-fired. Otherwise, she said, we are just moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic. We cannot wait, however, until our solutions are perfect. We have to think of them as bridges to get to solutions that will be even better, Skopik said. One promising carbon solution involves the soil and provides an excellent opportunity for Iowa. The opportunity is to plant as much of the state's crop land as possible with certain perennial cover crops after the main crop is harvested. That will pull carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back in the soil, which has suffered from carbon depletion resulting from conventional farming practices. Cover crops used for this purpose have deep roots, which help the soil store more carbon. Examples of such crops include clover, alfalfa, beans, peas, and oats. There are dozens more. The process also allows farmers to do less tilling, another plus for the atmosphere, because tilling releases a lot of stored carbon into the atmosphere. Finally, cover crops can reduce fertilizer runoff into waterways because they improve the health of the soil and prevent erosion. Soil-based carbon storage and sequestration, thus, is a three-way win: better soil, better atmosphere, better water quality in rivers and lakes. It is an amazing combination. Cropland, however, accounts for only 10% of the land on planet Earth. Iowa's place in this equation, thus, could be substantial. Next from the New York Times, we have "What Worries Me Most About a Trump Presidency." This written by Caroline Fredrickson. Here's the text. There are almost daily headlines now describing what Donald Trump would do if elected. The mass deportations, the pardons handed out to his friends and golf buddies, the Justice Department settling scores and waging personal vendettas. The former president has even promised violence if the election goes against him, warning that it could be a, quote, bloodbath, unquote. But as worrying as these prospects are, they are far from the biggest threats he poses. What we should fear most is that Mr. Trump transforming our government into a modern-day Tammany Hill, installing a kleptocratic leadership that will be difficult, if not impossible, to dislodge. I do not discount the possibility of state-sponsored violence, and I worry deeply about the politicization of the civil service. But those are, for the most part, threats and theories, and while they need to be taken seriously, people need to be paying more attention to a far more likely reality, that Mr. Trump would spend much of his time in office enriching himself. He failed spectacularly as an insurrectionist and as a disruptor of the civil service, and his clownish and chaotic style may well lead to failure again. But he has succeeded time and time again in the art of the steal. If his graft continues into a second term, it will not only contribute to the fraying trust Americans have in their institutions, but also impair our ability to lead the world through a series of escalating crises. Recall how Mr. Trump operated in his first term. Not only did he keep his stake in more than 100 businesses, he made it a practice to visit his properties around the country, forcing taxpayers to pay for rooms and amenities at Trump hotels for the Secret Service and other staff members who accompanied him. Money that went straight into his bank accounts and those of his business partners. Those interested in currying favor with the president, from foreign governments to would-be government contractors, knew to spend money at his hotels and golf clubs. According to internal Trump hotel documents, T-Mobile executives spent over $195,000 at the Trump Washington Hotel after announcing a planned merger with Sprint in April 2018. 2 years later, the merger was approved. Government, like fish, rots from the head down. Mr. Trump's example freed up cabinet members to award huge contracts to their friends, business associates, and political allies, while others ran their departments like personal fiefs. After the State Department's Inspector General was fired, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's use of official trips for clandestine meetings with conservative donors and allegations that his family misused staff members for tasks like walking his dog, picking up his wife from the airport, and fetching his takeout came to light. And, in addition to being accused of improperly accepting gifts from those seeking influence, several other cabinet members were alleged to have used government funds for private travel. These may seem like banal infractions, but taken together, they are a reflection of who Mr. Trump is and how he governs. Throughout his life, through Trump-branded wine, chocolate bars, sneakers, NFTs, ties, MAGA paraphernalia, a $59.99 Bible, of all things, and most recently, his Truth Social meme stock ploy, he has shown an unstoppable drive to enrich himself at all costs. He sees politics, like business, as a zero-sum game in which he wins only if someone else loses. These are the instincts that drive corruption, kleptocracy, and grift. And if past is prologue, we're looking at a much more damaging sequel. In a second term, Mr. Trump will have more freedom and power to undertake grift. He has already vowed to use pardons to protect supporters and possibly even himself from efforts to curb corruption, which may explain the nonchalance with which his son-in-law Jared Kushner has greeted criticism about the conflicts of interest raised by his recent real estate investments in Serbia and Albania, as well as the Saudi, Qatari, and Emirati investments in his wealth fund. And he and his political advisors are building a deep bench of committed and loyal employees who could corrode and potentially destroy mechanisms of accountability in government, paving the way for kleptocratic leaders to entrench themselves in the bureaucracy where many would be able to remain past Mr. Trump's term. And the mere presence of a phalanx of unquestioning lieutenants in the civil service will ensure that other civil servants fear retribution for objecting to the self-enrichment. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, April 12th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.